Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Aristocrat half-year results briefing. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There'll be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Trevor Croker, Chief Executive Officer and Managing Director. Please go ahead.
Welcome to Aristocrat Leisure Limited's financial results presentation for the 6 months to 31 March 2019. My name is Trevor Croker, Chief Executive Officer and Managing Director of Aristocrat. It is a pleasure for me to be presenting today along with Julie Cameron-Doe, our Chief Financial Officer. Thank you all for joining us. Before we begin, please note the usual disclaimer statement on slide two. Turning now to our agenda on slide three. Today we will spend some time recapping Aristocrat's strategy and updating you on our progress, particularly with respect to our digital business, before speaking to result highlights for the reporting period. We will then move on to our expectations for the 2019 fiscal full year before opening the line to Q&A. For clarity, all references to prior corresponding period, or PCP, represent the 6 months to 31 March 2018. Normalised results refer to the reported results excluding the impact of certain significant items and adjustments, as set out in the Review of Operations document. Turning first to strategy. Aristocrat is all about delivering superior, sustainable profit growth. We deliver this primarily through organic growth in existing markets and by attacking selected adjacencies, accelerated by M&A. This slide is one we've shared before. It summarises our operating model, which has been a key part of our strategic playbook over the last decade and continues to underpin our approach today. Our initial focus has been driving growth through adjacencies in our land-based business. Over the last 18 months in particular, we've deliberately brought a similar approach to digital, as evidenced by our move into social gaming adjacencies with the acquisition of Plarium and Big Fish. Our results for the half year to 31 March 2019 reflect our progress in executing this strategy in line with our expectations and previous commentary that we're at an earlier point in the implementation of digital than our land-based businesses. We continue to see pleasing progress across our portfolio and more opportunity to unlock benefits across our digital business and between land-based and digital operations as our capabilities grow. In terms of our land-based business on slide five, investors may remember that in 2014 we served only 65% of the outright sales market in North America, namely the video segment. Our first priority was share taking within this segment through effective segmentation, recruiting outstanding talent, investing in content and technology, and improving front-end execution. In other words, we focused on what we could control to drive share. This is another common theme that unites our approach to growth across all parts of our business. In the same year, Aristocrat had 9,000 recurring revenue games operating in commercial and Indian tribal casinos, representing 6% of the North American market. In financial year 15, we made a US $1.3 billion acquisition, bringing in VGT, which gave us a significant 20,000-unit, 100% recurring revenue footprint in Indian tribal casinos, and was also highly cash-generative, facilitating further investment back into the business to accelerate momentum. Over the last 4 years, we've also invested organically in top-performing and broader product portfolio to grow into new segments in North America, including in gaming operations Class 2 video, which offers further choice to Indian tribal casino customers, the mechanical reel or stepper market across both gaming operations and outright sales, the video lotteries terminal market, commonly referred to as VLT, which is a business-to-government or B2G market, the Washington Central Determinant System, or CDS market, and finally, the bar-top poker market. As a result of these investments, we anticipate being able to commercialise products across around 96% of the North American outright sales market and 80% of the recurring revenue market by the end of 2020, underpinning our ability to sustain high-quality growth going forward. We'll refer to our progress across these identified adjacencies later in the presentation. As I mentioned, we're applying a similar approach in digital and will now turn to slide eight. For clarity, all amounts referred to in the next two slides on digital are in US dollars. In 2013 financial year, we made a $30 million acquisition of the social casino business Product Madness, providing us with the capability to deliver games over social platforms, which at the time was largely Facebook. We sparked a wave of growth in the business by leveraging the power of our leading back catalogue casino titles, effectively creating a new monetisation channel for our land-based content and creating a powerful adjacency. While the social casino market grew at 21% CAGR over the past 6 years, we have grown Product Madness at 77% CAGR and built a firm foothold in the social casino market. At financial year 14, Product Madness daily active users, or DAU, averaged 625,000. Today, that figure is over 2 million. Similarly, monetisation levels measured as average bookings per daily active user, or ABDAU, have grown from 20 cents to now well over 50 cents. At the same time, however, we were always aware the social casino represented only a fraction of the total social games opportunity, and that our growth would fall away over time if we didn't do anything. That is clearly demonstrated on the slide, with social casino representing only $4.2 billion within a broader addressable market opportunity of around $32 billion. Consistent with our strategic playbook, we have since used our foothold and our increasing digital capabilities and experience to begin to attack significantly larger adjacent segment and genre opportunities over the last 18 months. As a result of our addressable mobile digital market has expanded from around $5 billion 18 months ago to around $32 billion of a $50 billion-plus opportunity today, as we've expanded into the genres you see on the slide. We've reached this point in terms of our strategy in digital several times faster than we did in our land-based business, underlining both the speed of this market and the benefit of experience and leveraging our proven land-based strategy. Given we began this next phase of growth in digital relatively recently, I'll quickly touch on the progress made, key capabilities, and areas of focus since our last update. Turning to slide 9, we brought our digital operations under common leadership, bedding down two significant acquisitions and implementing common processes. We've also been encouraging value-adding collaboration while preserving appropriate autonomy to allow the three digital businesses to maintain their culture, agility, and entrepreneurial spirit. We believe we now have the ingredients required to fuel the next phase of organic growth in digital. These are set out in the boxes on the left-hand side of the slide, starting with world-class game design talent. We now have capability in our core genres of social casino, social casual, and strategy, and the skills and incentive to enter fast-growing adjacent genres like RPG and action. We're able to do this in two ways. Firstly, internally through our studios, leveraging our increased presence in low-cost, high-skill development jurisdictions, and secondly, via our strong network of third-party design talent. In addition, we have the benefit of a number of evergreen brands in our key game franchises. Some of our games have been in the market for over 5 years and are still performing strongly, providing us with a healthy baseline of both revenue and margin through which to invest for further growth. We also have leading-edge native, digital and data skills in product management, including monetisation and game economy. We have the benefit of excellent digital marketing capability across our user acquisition, as well as organic marketing, driving virality and branding into our games, together with global digital market intelligence and portfolio planning skills. Finally, we have a strong culture of investing for growth in marketing and product development, backed by rigorous and common processes to test returns. Our vision for our digital business is similar to what we have achieved in land-based, namely to be a leading social digital publisher on a global basis. To achieve this, we're focused on three areas which can again be summarised as focusing on the things within our control. These are on the right-hand side of slide 9 and are portfolio growth and optimisation, leveraging our scale and driving efficiency. Turning first to our portfolio growth, we are investing in our key franchises through a relentless focus on delivering new content and features that resonate with players, keep titles fresh and drive sustained monetisation. At the same time, we're launching new games using our market intelligence and growing data capability to build out a strong portfolio across a growing range of genres. Portfolio growth is also about entering growth segments quickly and with proven capability and passionate teams. Finally, we're bringing the same rigorous approach to portfolio planning, segmentation and returns that has been key to our growth in land-based. We are fostering a fill or kill culture in digital where games are subject to clear KPI targets. This ensures we only launch the best products and that our marketing investment is also highly targeted behind our most promising opportunities. Fundamental to this culture is the preparedness to hold back games where KPI thresholds are not met and to manage through this variability. We have held back a handful of games in Big Fish and Plarium during the reporting period, and this preparedness will continue to be important going forward. Turning now to our second priority, leveraging our scale. Today we have an ecosystem of over 8 million daily active users within which we are increasingly able to cross-promote and use data to better understand player segments and emerging trends and to improve our products. On a combined basis, the Aristocrat Digital business is an important customer for key platform providers, and we are focused on leveraging these partnerships to generate value. For example, when we launched Raid, the game secured featuring on both iOS and Google stores. Apple even included the game in their marketing materials for the launch of their new iPad, underscoring the sorts of opportunity we focus on creating through our platform partners. Collaboration and sharing of best practices across our teams is also a key source of value, as I referenced earlier. An example here is the deployment of a shared, sophisticated UA management platform across all of our digital teams during the reporting period, which is facilitating better investment decisions on a portfolio basis. We are continually testing lifetime value or LTV of our games versus the cost per installation or CPI, improving efficiency, which is our third focus area. We've also realigned resources and game portfolios at Big Fish to focus on value creation, and we are leveraging Plarium's operational expertise in low-cost jurisdictions to stand up new studios. For example, during the reporting period, we established a new studio in Eastern Europe, which specialises in creating features for Product Madness games. As we shared at our Investor Day in May last year, our expectation was that in 2019 would be a year of investment and transition for this part of our business. We believe we now have in place the foundations of an effective organic growth strategy and are already seeing encouraging progress. Over the balance of the year, we expect to launch a great number and a range of features across all of our key franchises, including our social casino apps, to drive greater long-term engagement and monetization. These will include collectibles, leagues, social features, clubs, missions and live operations. Since period end, we have launched new features across Big Fish Casino and in the last 10 days also launched leagues in Heart of Vegas and collectibles in Cashman Casino. In addition, we're embedding a clear nail and scale approach with successful titles receiving full marketing support and investment to scale globally and ruthless prioritisation. Finally, we are launching several ambitious new games representing firsts to our business, including Toy Story Drop. Consistent with our success in land-based, we are working methodically and with the benefit of experience and increased capability to build on these foundations and deliver superior, sustainable growth in digital, consistent with shareholders' expectations and our potential. We are comfortable with the choices we have made and are confident we now have the platform to drive sustainable growth. We will return to many of these strategic themes as we move through the balance of today's presentation, but I will now make some comments on the changes in our tax arrangements that we disclosed to the market today. Turning to slide 10. Aristocrat's business profile has changed over the last several years with a large and increasing majority of profit generated from the US, now representing 60% of group revenues. In response to this significant shift and consistent with shareholders' interest, Aristocrat is in the process of implementing changes in its group structure to ensure that it remains fully aligned with the underlying business model. These changes are expected to result in the company being entitled to additional non-Australian tax deductions while continuing to be a tax resident and pay taxes in Australia. These changes are not expected to come into effect until after 30th of September 2019. Financially, these changes are expected to lead to reductions in both cash tax paid and accounting tax expense, but will not impact the amount of Australian tax the business pays, which has averaged over $120 million per year for the past 3 years, as disclosed in Aristocrat's Voluntary Tax Transparency Code report. Aristocrat has obtained a private ruling from the Australian Tax Office that confirms the treatment adopted by the group. As a result of the changes, the group's effective tax rate, ETR, is expected to reduce by 150 to 250 basis points compared to the financial year 19 ETR, to be 25 to 26%, which would continue to place Aristocrat well within the average ETR range for the ASX 100. We expect these benefits to continue into the future, subject to global tax policy or legislative changes. Upon implementation, the group expects to recognise a one-off material deferred tax asset. Implementation of these structural changes is subject to the receipt of gaming regulatory and other necessary approvals. These changes will further enhance our ability to invest in our business and behind our growth going forward. We'll provide a further update to the market, including indicative financial impacts on completion of the steps to implement after the 30th of September 2019. Moving now to an overview of Aristocrat's performance for the 2019 half year on slide 12. Normalised profit after tax and before amortisation of acquired intangibles, or NPATA, of $422 million represents growth of 16.8% in reported terms and 7.7% in constant currency. Normalised revenue increased 30% to over $2.1 billion, and earnings before interest, tax, depreciation and amortisation, EBITDA, increased 19% compared to the PCP to $766 million. In constant currency, revenue was up 21% and EBITDA increased more than 10%, reflecting strong gaming operations momentum. This was partly offset by lower digital margins, reflecting the impact of acquired lower margin social games in line with our expectations and an increase in design and development, or D&D, investment. Normalised fully diluted earnings per share before amortisation of acquired intangibles of 66.2 cents represents a 17% reported increase compared to the PCP. Normalised operating cash flow of $439 million was generated in the period, an increase of 45% on the PCP. Pro forma net gearing reduced to 1.6 times at 31 March, down from 2 times at our 31 March 2018 result. Turning to dividends, the directors have authorised an interim fully franked dividend of 22 cents per share in respect to the six-month period ended 31 March 2019. This represents an increase of 16% or 3 cents compared to the PCP and is reflective of strong earnings growth and cash flows, together with continued improvement in gearing. The record and payment dates for the interim dividend are 30 May and 2 July 2019, respectively. In summary, for the 6 months to 31 March 2019, Aristocrat reported a high-quality result, delivering a substantial lift in profit off the back of growth across the entire North American portfolio, including further progress in key adjacencies, a further increase in performance in ANZ despite a lower market, and growth in Product Madness and significant progress in building a diversified digital portfolio as we move through a transition year. Positive operating cash flow, together with improvement in our balance sheet and increased investment in our future through D&D, round out this result and position the business well as we move through the balance of the fiscal year. I'll now ask Julie Cameron-Doe to take us through the highlights of the group results on slide 13. Julie.
Thank you, Trevor, and good afternoon, everyone. I will first step through the composition of Aristocrat's reported normalised NPATA performance of $422 million reconciled to the PCP. Profit numbers referenced in this section are post-tax. Our Americas business delivered another strong performance, as Trevor referenced, leveraging its established momentum. Profit improved a further $50 million over the PCP, largely reflecting outstanding gaming operations performance and share gains within our outright sales business. The ANZ business also delivered further profit improvement, up $8 million compared to the PCP in a lower market. Margin expansion was driven by a favourable commercial mix and phasing of new games and market-leading cabinets. The digital business delivered over $23 million in incremental profit compared to the PCP, supported by the full period of benefit from acquisitions, while also investing significantly in launching new games and positioning the business for growth. In the International Class 3 segment, post-tax profit declined $10.6 million compared to the PCP. Corporate and interest costs increased by over $12 million compared to the 6 months to 31 March 2018, reflecting incremental funding of acquisitions and the need to invest in infrastructure to support a larger, more complex business. Increased D&D costs of almost $35 million versus the PCP reflects our commitment to invest in organic growth. We see this as an area of competitive advantage and therefore a top priority in terms of capital allocation. On a percentage of sales basis, D&D investment was 11.6% for the period, which remains broadly in line with our historic average. Aristocrat was the number one filer of trademarks in the United States in 2018, filing 624 federal trademark applications, with the second top-ranked company filing 210 applications. We also took the top spot for trademark applications in Australia for the year. This is another example of our commitment to investing in D&D, translating that investment into intellectual property and ensuring we aggressively grow and defend these assets. A decrease in the group's effective tax rate reflects the benefit of U.S. tax reform that came into effect from 1st of January 2018, combined with the change in geographic business mix. Favorable foreign exchange movements, primarily reflecting a weaker Australian dollar, improved profit by a further $29 million compared to the PCP. For additional transparency, Aristocrat implemented new accounting standards in the period, which changed the treatment of jackpot liabilities from an expense to a contra revenue. This has the effect of reducing revenue and average fee per day in North America with no impact on earnings, thereby increasing the margin percentage. We've restated these metrics in the PCP in order to improve comparability. Aristocrat incurred $10.5 million in significant items during the reporting period, primarily acquisition-related costs, including contingent retention and one-off transaction fees in relation to changes in the group structure. We have also included pro forma results for the digital business, given the timing of acquisitions in the PCP, on slide 19 of our investor presentation. Turning now to slide 14. Growth in EBITDA has flowed through to normalized operating cash flow, which has increased by more than 45% on the PCP to $439 million. Working capital as a percentage of sales stands at less than 6%, or fewer than 22 days. Capital expenditure increased around 25% to $150 million for the period. Around two-thirds of total CapEx relates to the investment in hardware required to support growth in our North American gaming operations installed base. This is expected to continue to drive high-quality recurring revenue streams and deliver strong returns on invested capital over time. Turning now to slide 15. This result highlights a further improvement in Aristocrat's balance sheet as a result of strong cash earnings growth. Net debt of around $2.4 billion Australian dollars compares to net debt of around $2.6 billion reported at 31 March 2018, representing a pro forma leverage ratio of 1.6 times versus 2 times in the PCP. During the period, free cash flow funded increases in tax and interest payments, as well as capital expenditure, higher dividends, and share payments. Post-period end, the business also repaid an additional $100 million US dollars in debt from our Term Loan B facility. We continue to be comfortable with Aristocrat's net gearing position, given the business's free cash flow generating capability and track record of deleveraging. As a company, we maintain a disciplined focus on risk management, with stable credit ratings that are aligned to our level of gearing and support our Term Loan B facility arrangements. This approach provides Aristocrat with financial certainty, competitively priced finance, and flexibility going forward. That concludes the summary of group performance highlights. I will now pass back to Trevor to comment on operational performance and outlook for the 2019 fiscal year. Trevor.
Thanks, Julie. I'll now speak to the key highlights of our operational results, beginning with the Americas on slide 17. I would note that full details are contained in the Review of Operations document released this morning. In local currency, Americas revenue increased around 18% and profit lifted 17% to over $682 million and approximately $374 million respectively over the reporting period compared with the PCP. Margins remained above 50%. As Julie referenced, the new accounting standard relating to jackpot liabilities has been applied to the current year and all relevant metrics restated in the PCP to assist with comparability. The business delivered outstanding growth in North American gaming operations, with our Class 3 premium gaming operations footprint expanding 18.5% to 21,695 units at period end, driving further share expansion in a relatively flat market. This progress was driven by continued penetration of Arc Single, Arc Double and Helix cabinets in combination with industry-leading games including Buffalo Grand, Five Dragons Grand and the Dragon and Lightning Link game families. This was further supported by the success of Flame 55 cabinet with strong initial performance with Buffalo Diamond as a multi-site jackpot product. The Realm XL Stepper product also continued to demonstrate improving momentum with the popular Liberty Link and strong portfolio performance in high denomination variants, including the Virtual Wheel products, Diamond Jewel, Cherry Riches, and our 777 Wildfire series. At period end, around 800 Realm XL units were installed, demonstrating good growth momentum in this important adjacency. In Class 2 gaming operations, VGT's install base grew 7.3% to 24,681 units compared to the PCP. This was driven by the ongoing success of our Ovation video product with over 4,200 units installed at period end and penetration into new gaming jurisdictions outside of Oklahoma. New hardware configurations were also introduced to support Ovation's momentum. As a result, Aristocrat has relationships with additional 7 tribal customers today compared to financial year 18. The business's total gaming operations install base increased 12% to over 46,000 units at period end, and the combined average fee per day increased 1.3% to $50.05. In outright sales, revenue increased 34% and unit sales grew over 38% to 8,974 units. This reflected strong portfolio momentum together with sales of around 2,000 units in key adjacencies and around 1,000 units into new casino openings during the period. Continued strength in average sales price, ASP, reflected Aristocrat's portfolio depth led by the performance of Helix XT and Helix Tower. Aristocrat continued to receive outstanding customer feedback in North America over the first half of fiscal 2019, ranking as the leading gaming equipment supplier consistently across a number of key casino customer surveys. In February, Aristocrat took home 7 of the 21 individual category awards at the first ever EKG Slot Awards, including the prize for Best Overall Supplier of Slot Content. The land-based category winners were determined by over 100 slot managers representing more than 300 casinos across North America. Aristocrat's America's land-based business operations now account for around 57% of total segment profit and offers further growth potential for our business. Going forward, we are focused on leveraging our momentum and increasing capabilities to deliver further growth in our established market positions and in attractive adjacencies. In particular, we'll continue to build on our commercial presence across Class 3 Stepper, both in the for sale and gaming operations segment, as well as in Class 2 Video, Washington CDS and VLT markets. Now turning to the ANZ and international Class 3 results on slide 18. The ANZ business delivered another record half-year performance with double-digit profit growth on the back of a 7% increase in revenues and a sustained customer-focused strategy. Average selling price improved marginally, up 1.9%, and segment profit margin increased 190 basis points to 47.3%. This reflects favourable product mix and the expansion of our subscription model. The business continued to offer more flexible customer solutions through the period with an increase in long-term buying programs for strategic accounts and bundled offers. The ANZ business extended its market-leading ship share performance over the 6 months to 31 March 2019, driven by the high-performing Helix cabinet range and further penetration of Dragon Link and Dragon Cage game families, with additional games along with Player's Choice, Opal, Cash Boost and Fantastic Jackpots. The Helix Plus cabinet continues to be the cabinet of choice in ANZ, with the Helix XT gaining traction during the year with the benefit of an extended game portfolio. Macquarie's Australian Slot Manufacturers Report for March 2019 showed Aristocrat Games again occupied a large majority of the top spots for performance across New South Wales, Queensland and Victoria. In the international Class 3 segment, revenue and profit decreased 15% and 27% respectively to $92 million and $40 million compared to the PCP. I'll now provide more detail of performance in our digital gaming segment on slide 19. Digital revenue grew 37% compared to the PCP, reflecting growth in Product Madness and the full period impact of Plarium and Big Fish as previously flagged. Bookings grew over 34% while remaining flat on a pro forma basis, reflecting a period of investment and transition in our digital portfolio. Segment margin moderated to 30% in line with expectations due to the full period impact of the lower margin social casual segment and significant marketing investment behind the launch of Raid: Shadow Legends, which launched globally in March 2019. Finally, segment profit grew 17% to US$176 million, but on a pro forma basis, it declined 6.6% against the PCP. This again reflects higher marketing spend behind new games and a decline in legacy titles, partially offset by a focus on efficiency. We categorise our digital business as a social casino and social casual segments. As previously mentioned, bookings are broadly balanced between the two segments. The social casino segment contributed US$316 million in bookings in the period, an increase of 29% compared to the prior corresponding period. This was driven mainly by growth in Lightning Link, launched in the prior period, and continued strong performance in Jackpot Magic slots. The social casual segment contributed US$270.1 million in bookings in the period, an increase of 42% compared to the prior corresponding period. This was driven mainly by strong performance in the key titles Cooking Craze, Lost Island Blast Adventure, and the newly launched Raid: Shadow Legends. Daily active users, DAU, moderated to 8 million, down 3.6%, with growth in key titles offset by modest declines across some social casino and maturing social casual apps. The full period impact of the acquisitions, which introduced a new, diverse portfolio of customers and products that monetize differently to Aristocrat's established digital businesses, and the launch of new games in the period, resulted in a lower ABDAU compared to prior periods. The business is investing strongly in launching new games and increasing UA spend over 45% to US$153 million during the reporting period, approximating to around 26% of sales. Turning now to bookings on slide 20. To recap, bookings represent the cash a player has paid as opposed to revenue, which is an accounting number that recognises only the items the player has actually consumed. Of course, cash flow provides a more meaningful indicator of performance, and as a result, we are increasingly focused on bookings rather than revenue in our digital business. This slide is designed to highlight some of the important features of our portfolio approach to digital. Firstly, our current portfolio is well diversified with a good balance between social casino and social casual game segments overall. As the charts on the left-hand side demonstrate, social casino represents around 54% or slightly more than half of total bookings at period end, driven by the scaling of Lightning Link and Big Fish's Jackpot Magic slots, while the social casual segment accounted for 46%. Secondly, the changes we are driving in our game portfolio are already improving the diversity of our overall bookings mix, with our top four games delivering 51% of total bookings during the reporting period versus 57% 12 months ago, as the bar charts on the right demonstrate. As we continue to build out the portfolio, we anticipate lessening our reliance on a small number of key titles over time and further enhancing performance and portfolio sustainability. Finally, the bar charts also show the quality of Aristocrat's digital portfolio with a broad suite of games with bookings of greater than US$50 million annually, including Heart of Vegas, Cashman Casino, Big Fish Casino, Lightning Link and Jackpot Magic in social casino. And in social casual, this list includes Vikings, Cooking Craze and Gummy Drop. Another lens on how we're building out our digital portfolio is to view it from the perspective of life cycles and active portfolio management. This slide shows the progress we're making in filling pipelines across key genres and between social casino and social casual categories, ensuring we're optimally managing the number of and cadence of releases. It also demonstrates the strength of our evergreen titles and our continued investment behind these with new features that drive long-term engagement. We're making good progress in ensuring we're having a strong, diverse and well-performing portfolio. We continue to see outstanding potential in our digital business and also regarded as a critical contributor to overall group diversity long-term growth and performance stability. Turning now to outlook for the 2019 fiscal year on slide 22. Consistent with February 2019 guidance statement, Aristocrat continues to track in line with its plans for continued growth in the 2019 fiscal year. In land-based outright sales, we expect incremental gains in attractive North American adjacencies, in addition to maintaining market-leading share positions across key for sale segments globally, including in APAC region, with no major casino expansions planned in financial year 19. In land-based gaming operations, we expect expansion across our total gaming operations install base, leveraging our broadening portfolio while maintaining market-leading average fee per day performance across the overall combined install base. We continue to anticipate further growth in digital bookings supported by new game releases. User acquisition or UA spend is expected to remain at around 25 to 28% of overall digital revenues, with the higher relative spend reflective of the increased number of games released planned for financial year 19. We anticipate lifting D&D investment across our land-based and digital portfolio in absolute dollar terms while remaining broadly in line with PCP as a percentage of sales. We anticipate moderate growth in corporate costs as we build the appropriate infrastructure to grow a more complex and diverse business. We expect a further 100 to 150 basis points reduction in the group's effective tax rate versus financial year 18. And finally, as we build towards a more diversified digital portfolio, we continue to expect some skewing of our earnings to the second half of the financial year, reflecting the planned cadence of game releases and corresponding UA investment as previously noted. Before moving to take your questions, I'd like to recap the shape of our result for the half year to 31 March 2019 on slide 23. We are pleased to have delivered another record NPATA result with a strong 17% lift in normalised terms and 8% on a constant currency basis. This in turn was driven by broad growth across all parts of our largest business in North America, together with further performance in ANZ, growth in Product Madness, and the full period contribution of our digital acquisitions as we continue to execute our growth strategy across land-based and digital operations. Aristocrat's increased investment in D&D during the period demonstrates our commitment to sustaining our growth engine. The group also continued to generate strong free cash flows over the first half of fiscal 2019. Despite increasing dividends and reinvesting strongly in business, our operating leverage continues to trend back post-acquisitions. Finally, we continue to have a strong and flexible balance sheet that gives us full optionality to continue to improve our competitiveness and invest behind our growth plans going forward. We look forward to keeping you updated as we progress. And with that, I'll conclude the formal presentation and open the line to any questions.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you are on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Don Carducci from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone. Just a couple from me, and then I'll get back in the queue. So with the North American platform sales increase of 2,500 machines, how should we think about the portion of this which is organic to previous markets versus, you know, recently entered adjacency markets? And how should we consider remaining adjacency growth in the second half with lower ASP markets like Bartop? So basically, is there a similar amount of growth to come, or do we consider the majority was in the first half?
Yeah, thanks, Don. Appreciate the question. So in the makeup of the numbers for the first half, we had around 2,000 units coming through from adjacencies, Washington CDS and VLT in that space, and around 1,000 from new openings. We expect the second half to have a lower number of new openings in North America, so down on last year and down on the second half as well. And we expect the market to remain about the same size. We will enter into Bartop in the second half of this year, and that will be our next adjacency that we'll enter and continue to execute in the two adjacencies that we entered in the first half.
Great, thank you. And then my last question is, it feels like there's a difference from the expectations of the November result for the number of games that you would release in the first half and the subsequent, you know, associated UA spend that would impact the margins. Can you talk to this delta and whether you have a target in mind for the number of new titles that you're going to launch in the second half and whether that transition period of fiscal year 19 is on track for completion so that there's a full run rate of digital by this time next year?
Yeah, thanks, Don. As I mentioned earlier, you know, we've got this preparedness to hold games back if they're not right, and that's the great part about a digital business is you can put a game out and you can continue to refine it. And once you know that the game is operating at the level that you want it to operate from a monetization, retention, and performance basis, we're then able to then allocate the right amount of marketing and UA investment to drive that. So we still remain committed. Our pipeline of games that we have for the digital business is still there. We're continuing to refine that pipeline and refine the features within those games. And we said that we were going to spend somewhere between 25 and 28% of sales or revenue on UA. We remain committed to that investment, and the pipeline is still full. And we're continuing to make sure those games are refined for release, and we'll release them as required.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Mark Wilson from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much, Trevor. Just looking at the digital division in more detail, given that we're cycling through the runoff in some of those legacy games, Raid is scaling up. How do we think about the second half and going in through into fiscal 20 in terms of top line? And have margins bottomed in that division at 30%.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. I think the way we think about it from a top line point of view is that this is what we've said a transition year for our digital business. So we have three categories if you think about it from our digital games point of view. We've got the evergreen brands, we've got the legacy brands, and then we've got the emerging brands. And it's playing this portfolio. We feel comfortable that the evergreen brands are performing at the rates that we expected. The emerging or new brands, as you say, in Raid, are starting to come through. And from a legacy point of view, we're continuing to watch investment in legacy so that we don't overinvest. In fact, they become great profit businesses as opposed to revenue and revenue investment businesses. So from our perspective, we believe we remain on track to deliver on our expectations for the full year. As I said earlier, our pipeline is continuing to be strong, and we've got the rigor around when we release and how we invest behind the games. I would make one highlight, which is that we've got Toy Story coming down, Toy Story Drop coming down the pipe, which will be released in, it is being released as we speak, and that will be the next new game, which was part of our anticipated game releases for this year as well. I'll just hand to Julie to talk to you about the margins.
Thanks, Trevor. In terms of the margin, I think as we've discussed previously, the margin for digital really depends on where we're at in terms of the mix of social casino and social casual, and then within that, the mix in terms of the profile of the portfolio that we have with, when we're launching new games and investing heavily behind UA, we do expect to see in the short term an impact on margin, and so it really depends on the mix that's coming through. We're very pleased with the margin that we've achieved in the first half, if you think about what we released in the first half, Raid came out at the beginning of March, so we only had a month of Raid, and from an earnings perspective, that was negative for us, but of course, we believe that was the right thing to do because that's driving long-term growth of the company.
Thanks. So just following on from that, you mentioned Toy Story Drop. Any other key game releases that are planned at this stage for the second half?
We have a number of game releases in the pipe, Mark, but we're not releasing the names and the timing for those at the moment. Some will start in soft launch soon and some are already in the market at the moment.
Great. Thanks, Trevor.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Kane Hannan from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Afternoon, Trevor, Julie. Just two for me, please. On the digital business, appreciate there's obviously those new game launches coming, but could you just comment, I suppose, on the magnitude of that legacy revenue decline in terms of as a revenue bucket and how we should be thinking about the profile of that decline? And then just again on the digital business, Just interested in that AppDAO decline and whether there was any impact from the launch of RAID late in the period that maybe boosted the user numbers for the last month. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Kane. I'll ask Julie to talk to you about the legacy piece and then I'll talk to AppDAO decline.
Thanks, Trevor. Hi, Kane. I'd draw your attention to slide 20, which is where we've provided more information about the portfolio to really demonstrate, you know, the stability and diversity we have in the portfolio now. Within that, you can see Big Fish Premium, which we would consider part of legacy, and you can see the size of that and the decline of that coming through. So we don't see it as a large part of the business. We acknowledge it is in decline, but we're providing more transparency so that you can start to model that going forward.
Thanks, Julie. Then on the AppDAO decline, this is about a transition year for us. This is about making sure that we're investing behind both the legacy brands and the emerging titles at the same time. You will see some AppDAO shift, as we referred to, as a consequence of the mix between social casino and social games. We feel comfortable with where the AppDAO's at, and it is part of the overall plan of the transition year this year for the digital business.
Thanks, guys. And sorry, just to follow up on that legacy portfolio, how should we be thinking about the other bucket that you're breaking out there, that 23% of revenue? And is there much in there for games that do less than, you know, 50 mil per annum that you haven't put on that chart, or are they in the other bucket?
I mean, it captures everything. In terms of what's in that, that would have the up-and-coming games that haven't quite hit the mark yet, but it would also have the older games as well. Yes.
Thanks, guys.
Lost Island and Raid would be in there, of course, amongst the up-and-comers, but also there would be the older Plarium games and the other games that haven't hit that threshold as well.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Matt Ryan from UBS. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, Trevor. Hi, Julie. Just starting in social casual, as you call it now, we can all say that Raid's doing pretty well, and usually there's a ramp-up period of spend before the game becomes profitable. But is this game sort of profitable at the moment? Has it accelerated quicker than the average? And then maybe if you can talk about Toy Story Drop and what you've learned through the soft launch phase and how that compared to Raid.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. Appreciate the question. Just on the casual piece, Raid in these numbers is only 1 month of performance, and that is really off the back of a very strong launch with iOS and Google, and we're now continuing to spend UA dollars off the back of rigorous metrics around retention, monetization, and we'll continue to do that. We are not, as of these numbers, we are not in profit for the half on that product. But we are continuing to see the growth and the momentum we expect behind that, and it's meeting our expectations from that perspective. What have we learnt from Toy Story is we've learnt through this process and also through some of the great talent that we've been able to bring into the business around marketing and marketing skills, ways of creating our increased virality. And certainly the Toy Story Drop brand, strong brand from Disney, and the ability to partner and work with them on launch campaign and launch product. We expect that to be a new skill set which we've been able to acquire through talent, but also in the way we're executing now with Toy Story Drop. So we will see that come into the market now, and then they'll be refreshed as the movie comes out in June. And there's a key link between our objectives and timing and also Walt Disney's on the brand.
Just to clarify your comment about not profitable in the half for Raid, are you meaning the first half that you've already reported or the second half that we're in at the moment?
We had 1 month in the market for the first month. So it only relaunched in March, so we had 1 month of revenue plus cost for launch.
And as of today, we're less than 3 months in, so you know how these games go, Matt. So we're not quite there yet.
Yeah, okay, that's what I was assuming. Okay. And then maybe, Julie, just going back 6 months, I think you talked about $100 million of increased UA spend, so just curious as to whether that still holds at the moment. And are you able to tell us what the UA spend was in fiscal year 18. We've obviously got the number now for the first half. I'm just curious on what that was for the full year.
So on page 19, I'm sure you've already seen it, we're showing UA spend in US dollars going from 105 in the prior year to 153 this year. So you'll see within the first half, about 50 million ahead of where we were last year, which kind of lines up with the 100 million we previously mentioned. But we thought we'd be a bit more helpful and sort of guide to UA as a percentage of revenue, which was 25 to 28% when we reframed our guidance in February, and we're still holding to that. You'll have seen for the period it was at 26%. So we're lining up against that, and we expect that range to hold for the full year as well.
Okay, so was it still going to be around 100, though?
As I said, we're moving to that guide now in terms of the percentage of revenue. So for the first half, it's on track. But as we've said previously, the 100 million, we were worried that people would assume we'd spend it regardless of performance, and we monitor performance very carefully, and we only release the spend when we see the performance. And so it's more appropriate to look at this from a percentage of revenue perspective.
Fair enough. And just what did you spend in fiscal year 18 on UA, approximately?
We don't have that number to hand right now, Matt. I'm sure Ron and Ruben can follow up with you on that.
Sure. Would a percentage of revenue of around 25 be roughly accurate?
We're consistent. It's been 25 to 28% over the last few years.
Okay, great. And then just last question, I guess, there's a lot of positives clearly coming through from online, but one of the areas which we're watching pretty closely is product madness, and I guess just slower growth coming from social casino versus what you've done previously, obviously on a much bigger base now. So just curious on how much of that drag is coming from web and Facebook at the moment, and also, what the plans are for product madness, and in particular, very specifically for Lightning Link in the US, given how well it's done in Australia so far.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. First of all, I think one of the things that we talk about is the fact that since we've had product madness, the category's been growing at 21% CAGR, and we've been able to grow it at 77% CAGR, which we're very proud of, obviously. The second part is we don't have a lot of exposure to web and Facebook through the PM portfolio. We moved that to mobile very early in the acquisition of that product or that business, and largely mobile. We do have some exposure, but it's less than industry numbers. The Heart of Vegas has had a slower half than we wanted. That was a little bit of a frustration for us, because to date we've been able to continue to publish great content and continue to grow strongly. What we've seen in more recent times is features such as collectibles, clubs, etc., tournaments being added to social casino apps. We made that decision, as we said earlier, to put out a live ops studio and start to increase our live ops capability, which we've done. And we actually started to launch our first range of live ops into the Heart of Vegas app only in the last couple of weeks, with early response being very positive from that perspective. So whilst we've been moving to a new range of extra features on top of our land-based content being published, some of the competitors have just been adding those features prior to us. But that's still a robust business, and we did acquire Big Fish, which brought us some skills, particularly around clubs and social meta, and those skills have also been helpful in addressing the Heart of Vegas app as a whole. You asked a question about Lightning Link. I mean, Lightning Link continues to scale for us. It has been scaling in Australia as a priority, and we've been focusing on that. The content and the features, we will continue to refine those to get global distribution for that product as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from David Barbaras from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, Trevor. Hi, Joe. Focusing back on the Americas business, outside the big step up in outright sales providing operating leverage, were there any other benefits to the margin when we look at that sequentially?
Yeah, thanks, David. I'll pass to Julie to talk to you about the margin for North America.
Yeah, and I don't want to repeat myself too much, but we just want to start by reminding everyone that the margin was affected by the accounting standard, which didn't affect earnings, but obviously jackpot liabilities come off revenue now as a contra rather than as an expense. so we did restate margins. So we're down about 40 basis points year over year, and that's an apples-to-apples comparison. In terms of movements in the margin in North America, we are getting operating leverage from having a larger gaming operations install base, so that is certainly coming through. The counter to that has been, as we're expanding into all of these different adjacencies, we are expanding into areas where there's, you know, we require a larger infrastructure to support them, a larger sales force and so on, and some of them obviously have lower average selling prices than the video segment where we previously was the only segment we sold into.
Okay, thanks. And just another question on the North America business. Just to clarify an earlier question, within outrights, can you just talk through the contribution splitting VLT and CDS and how we should think that about that into the second half, given you sort of called out 2,000 unit sales in the first half?
Yeah, thanks, David. So realistically, we have entered VLT, which was two provinces that we entered this year. And as you know, they're business-to-government propositions, so they do take some time. We have plans to enter another couple of provinces, but it may not, well, they will not materialise in the numbers in this financial year. As far as Washington CDS goes, we have had a good start to that, and we do have a pipeline of games and a pipeline of opportunities in the Washington market for the balance of this year. We're not guiding to what that number looks like, but we're confident in the product that we've made, the performance of the product, and the penetration to date.
Yeah, okay, thanks. And just one last question from me. Just looking at the capital structure, I know you guys made comments earlier that you're fairly comfortable with where the gearing is and your deleveraging, but if we look at this over the medium term, is 1.5 times leverage sort of a comfortable level, or would you be more comfortable closer to 1 times leverage?
Thanks, David. Look, we're pretty comfortable with where we're at in terms of leverage. You know, we're demonstrating nice progress of deleveraging, and that, you know, that trajectory will continue. So we like to keep our options open. We see we've got a very strong balance sheet. We have nice long tenor debt, which is well priced. We've prepaid plenty of that, so we have no obligations to make further repayments on the debt. But we will of course look to pay down that debt as we generate further cash flow, and we wouldn't rule out any other options.
Okay, I'll leave it at that for now. Thank you.
Thanks, David.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Larry Gandler from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking the call. First question on digital, Trevor. Just looking at that game breakout, appreciate the disclosure there. Do you imagine a time where the dispersion of the games you have is perhaps more broad? Right now you've got 16% of sales is the largest game. Is there a time where perhaps the largest game is 3 or 4% of sales? Is that how you kind of see the portfolio evolving?
Larry, I think 3 or 4% might be a little bit lower than my anticipation. We do expect to see a broader distribution of sales across those bar charts. I think more importantly, I expect to see the bar charts to be bigger than what they currently are, so getting into a larger addressable market. Really, the story here is about a portfolio growth, which is continuing to have a strong pipeline of games and executing on those games at high quality. You know, this rigor that we've talked about a couple of times now about fill or kill, and making sure that if we're not making it. The other one's about leveraging the scale, is building out this scale both in DAUs and also leveraging our capacity and capability across that DAU pool, but also our data science as well. And then really maximising our UA spend. I think 3 or 4%. Is a very, very low number, and it'll be a to me, it'll be a shotgun approach as opposed to a sniper's approach to what we're looking to achieve. We do expect to have a broader distribution across our portfolio of apps, and that's really what we're building for out of this year as a transition year, is to start to broaden that distribution of games. As we said earlier, you should be expecting in those others games like Raid. I would expect would start to come into these because this is a 50 million PA. Annualised number, 50 million annualised number. I'd expect Raid to be falling into that range when we report next.
Yes, so you'd expect many more games over $50 million in a larger business is what you're saying.
You've said it more eloquently than I could.
Okay, great. I got that. And with regard to the Australian business, it seems like you're having quite a bit of success with the access model and the leasing there. And there's not much disclosure about it in the results documents, but it is quite distortive to that whole business. So can you give us some color on how we should think about modeling that or projecting revenues?
Sure. I think I'll talk very quickly to the process. It's been a model that we've refined over a number of years now, and you've been watching that flow through. It's a model that is, it's not a model that every customer wants, but it's a model that applies to some of our customers, and this is why we continue to remain customer-centric in what we do. And I think it's probably best if Julie makes some comments on just what it looks like from a financial point of view.
Thanks, Trevor. So the access model, was, as Trevor said, it's been developed over a few years, and it's really about providing the best solutions from a customer perspective and giving them choice. We've seen a good take-up of it. We've seen, the customers like it because of the conversions that it offers them and allows them to keep their floors fresh. We don't disclose more on that. What we can say is we are moving to more kind of long-term relationships with our customers, and these subscription-style offerings are becoming more popular.
I know you haven't disclosed it yet, Julie, but it's ironic that you disclose participation for Latin America, but not the lease games for Australia, which is quite material. I'm just wondering if you can sort of give us a feel for, how many units are under this lease model.
It's not something that we disclose, Larry.
Okay. Maybe I'll just ask one last question then, if I can, and that's regarding the second half guidance. When I think about some of these items, that it sounds like you're suggesting the second half will be larger than the first half in NPAT-A, based on the guidance. And when I think about Australia and even outright sales in North America, it sounds like your language is that might be smaller in profit in the second half. What major streams are going to be larger in profit in the second half?
Yeah, thanks, Larry. As you rightly say, with the portfolio we have now, there's quite a lot of different moving pieces to this.
Mm-hmm.
So, as we've flagged, we do expect some skewing to the second half, and this is largely in relation to the timing of this pipeline of digital game releases and the UA investment. And I think I've already referred to, for example, at the end of the first half, we had Raid, which required, we put significant UA behind that. But, of course, that was negative from an earnings perspective because it didn't pay back in the first half. And similarly, the new features that Trevor referenced that we're rolling out in Social Casino, we would expect to see those help lift digital in the second half. We've got a higher gaming operations install base going into the second half, so you get a natural lift from that. And I think really what I'd do is I'd frame it with reference to history. And if you look at the past 2 years, we've had pretty even splits between the first and second halves. Prior to that, we had slightly more pronounced splits, and I'd say we wouldn't be going back to the days when we had much more pronounced skews, but we wanted to make sure people understood that it's not going to be the even split that we've seen in the last 2 years.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Anthony Longo from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Oh, good afternoon, Trevor. Good afternoon, Julie. A couple quick questions from me. So firstly on digital, just obviously noticed the DAU number has obviously come back again given the rejigging post the acquisitions. Are you able to maybe give a sense as to how you're expecting that DAU growth to materialise going forward? Is it something that, you'd expect those legacy titles to sort of roll off and new titles to literally add to the base? But so I guess what I'm trying to say is that do you expect it to sort of be growing at low sort of single digits and being held rather flat, and I guess the top line largely driven by monetization, or am I missing the point on that?
No, thanks, Anthony. I think, first of all, this is our transition year for our digital business, and we are making some choices, as we mentioned, about our preparedness to both fill and kill products. So from a portfolio point of view, we want to execute high-quality new games and new content into the marketplace. And that means in some cases we are winding back investment in potentially some of the legacy products, which allows us to make better profits from that point of view. That obviously is a clear strategy. The second part about it is that we will continue to invest to grow our core business from a DAO point of view. So we've seen casino DAO increase by about 3%, and we've seen casual DAO come off by about 3%, but we're focusing on the quality of our DAO, not the quantity of DAO, and I think there's been enough industry commentary around DAO remaining relatively flat, and we then expect to see that we'll get an increase in our DAO in the second half off the back of the momentum that Raiders demonstrated in the last month of the last half, and also, as I mentioned earlier, the release of Toy Story Drop, which we expect to see DAO growth from as well.
Great. And then so back on the Americas and looking at outright sales, I mean, so you did sort of touch on those adjacencies had contributed maybe 2,500 in there. But so I guess what I want to get a sense as to the average selling prices ex those adjacencies, which I understand are lower ASPs, are you able to give a sense as to how the other part of the market has held up in the context of, you know, recent competitor reports?
Yeah, thanks, Anthony. Well, some of those adjacencies are lower ASP, and that's a consequence of the economic models that we have, and we have mentioned that there are some ASP pressures on that. From an overall market point of view, you know, North America is one of our most aggressive markets. We've got legitimately 10 competitors in the North American market where, you know, game content and cabinets we're fighting for share a floor on a regular basis. I'm very happy with the progress that we're making. We still hold a premium ASP to all of our competitors. We also hold strong game performance in a portfolio. And from our sales execution point of view, I think the relative percentages, which I won't quote to save the question, the relative percentages of the opening at Encore was a step up from where we've been historically. So, in a tough market, we're fighting for our share. We're gaining share in for sale. And there is some dilution as a consequence of entering adjacencies, but again, this is a planned approach for us to grow our business overall.
Oh, great. And sorry, final one from me, just in the Class 3 gaming ops, and apologies if I've missed the answer earlier. Net adds look like a really strong result. So are you able to give a bit of colour as to, was there anything in particular in that first half that may have driven that sort of strong result in the first half, and just in us rebasing or taking into account forecasts for the second half on that front?
No, it's the continued momentum of the game portfolio, cabinet portfolio that we're continuing to launch. Flame 55 came out. Buffalo Diamond has come onto the floor and been a very strong performer from day one. We've seen momentum continue to build on Realm XL, which is our gaming ops stepper product, and we've continued to release good quality games off the back of the consistent performance of our Dragon Link and Lightning Link install bases.
Excellent. Well, thanks very much. I'll leave it there for now.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Sasha Crean from Evans & Partners. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Trevor and Julie. Most of my questions have been asked, but I've got a couple. Social casinos, first of all, and then one on the tax guidance. But in terms of social casinos, you mentioned, Trevor, that, you know, industry trends around daily active users have seen them slow down a bit. Can you comment generally on whether you still see a lot more growth in this particular market, particularly the biggest market being the US? And maybe within your comments, can you perhaps, rather than daily active users, can you make a comment around paying users for your social casinos?
Yeah, thanks, Sasha. No problems at all. First of all, I mean, we've seen a slowing in DAO in the social casino market now for a period of time, and that's industry-wide. The one thing that we continue to focus on is improving our monetization, and we know that that's been a positive for our business. When you look at, we started in this category at around 20-odd cents or even sub 20 cents. We're now holding well over 50 cents. We know our content resonates, but at the same time, there are changes happening in the category with social aspects, metagame aspects, so adding collectibles, missions, clubs, leagues, tournaments, leaderboards and collectibles into the portfolio. It's an important way of remaining competitive, and we have already started to launch a couple of those into Heart of Vegas, and we've seen responses already. Plus, we've launched one into the Big Fish Casino as well, which was Treasures, and I'm happy with the performance of those. So Big Fish Casino's launched Treasures. Heart of Vegas has launched leagues just recently, and Cashman has launched collectibles. And we've deliberately tried different features in each app so that we're able to learn from that and then apply those differently across the other apps as opposed to putting them all into one. We really believe that there's strong monetization in what we do, and we're focused on retention, which is something that we've learned over the last 6 years as a digital casino operator ourselves, and we remain focused on that.
And can you just clarify, has the conversion rate from daily active users to paying users actually improved, or it's staying about the same?
I would guide to it staying about the same. We're seeing slightly better in some cases, but I would say on an average it's staying about the same. From a ABDAO point of view, there is good momentum in ABDAO in certain apps where we've started to do different features. So okay. Monetization is still a focus for us, and we're seeing monetization improving.
And that's really a second half story, those new features that have been introduced into the Product Madness apps?
Yes, correct. They've really only been released in the last couple of weeks, and Treasures in Big Fish were about a month ago. So it is okay. Very, very new, but the great thing about digital business is you release something and within hours you can monitor what it's doing to your business.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks. And last question on social casino. So just in terms of that monetization strategy, does advertising play a part yet in your thinking for all the active users that aren't monetizing at all, which is probably around 95%?
It's actually... from our perspective, it's actually a very, very small part. We really focus on entertaining our players, adding the features and benefits and providing great casino content. We actually don't see ads as a big part of that at this point in time.
Okay, thanks. And just two questions around the tax guidance. So the 25-26% for FY20, is that the way we should think about the effective tax rate beyond FY20 as well?
Thanks, Sasha. So the update we provided on tax is really the position that we're able to share at this point in time. I think you're probably aware this is something we've been working on for some time. It's been a long process to work through. We're really focused on the long term with this, and as we've been looking at this and trying to align the group's structure to the underlying business model, we've had to take into account the fact that we are much more present in the US than we are in Australia, and therefore we had to really get pretty expert in terms of the laws over there. And as we're looking at this, we're definitely looking at the long term. So at this point in time, we are saying that it's a reduction on FY19 of 150 to 250, starting not before FY20. So that would be kind of the average we're looking at going forward.
Okay, thank you. And then just last question, if you can comment on it, is the actual cash tax rate lower than the effective tax rate? And is that something that's also going to be maintained going forward?
So we'll provide more when we know, once we actually implement this. We've still got some way to go before we implement it. We were pleased, we've been engaging with the authorities and we were pleased to obtain a private ruling that confirms the treatment. But given we're still some months away from implementation, there's other factors in terms of the valuation that will come through on that, and we'll know more later, and we'll be quantifying the size of that material deferred tax asset we relate to, and also we would like to provide a range of cash tax savings that we'll achieve as well.
Okay, great. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Nick Kelly from Bailu. Please go ahead.
I think most of my question has been answered, actually. But just, Julie, if you could just help us, extension of the last question, what should we put in our models for franking?
Oh, okay, franking credits. So as we've as we mentioned in the announcement, the changes we're looking at don't impact our Australian tax, so we'll continue to pay tax in Australia as we have. We've just announced a dividend for the interim dividend, which is fully franked and subject to us continuing and, based on what we know today, continuing to pay tax at this level in Australia, we would expect to continue to do that.
You expect to fully frank for a while yet?
No change to status quo.
Okay, that's good. And just the last one, possibly for Trevor, is I know it's early, but is there any sort of anecdotal feedback from land-based venues in North America how sports wagering may change their landscape at all? Any feedback from your clients?
Yeah, thanks, Nick. I've actually got Matt Wilson in on the line, who's close to the market there. We're obviously in conversations with a lot of our major customers on a regular basis, so I'll just hand to Matt to make a couple of comments.
Yeah, so obviously in the early stages of sports wagering rolling out across the Americas region, the feedback we're getting from major casino operators is they see this as an ancillary benefit for their broader business. Obviously, sports wagering in the markets, which is legal today, is still a small percentage of the overall market, but there are benefits in terms of increased visitation from patrons and increased frequency of visits and spend per visit. So there should be a slight tailwind for GGR across the Americas based on the ancillary benefits that come with sports wagering.
Thank you very much. I'm done.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Mr. Croker for closing remarks.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'd just like to reinforce this is another high-quality result for Aristocrat. Positive reflects the strong execution of our strategy in a strong and stable business, creating value for our customers and our stakeholders and shareholders. Land-based business continue to drive profitable growth as we expand our addressable markets and take share. We're making towards building a larger, more diversified digital portfolio, supported by strong evergreen and new titles, exposes us to a much larger, fast-growing market opportunities. The financials are strong and continue to improve, operating cash flow and dividend up, leverage and effective tax rate trending down, which highlights the sustainability of our business model. With that, on behalf of the broader Aristocrat team, I'd like to thank you for your interest in the company and wish you all a pleasant afternoon. Thank you.